and left a shirt patch. He pointed to a patch on the shoulder of his shirt. Had them specially made. All right, then. Stay clear of the taped-off area.
Yes, sir.
The two headed north, away from the meadow. Matt turned to Blake. If they found the cache, what are they still doing here? 12. The postage stamp quilt is a beautiful example of intricate work. And you might be surprised to know that many Amish love to travel. They hire drivers to take them on vacation. They refuse to fly and will only travel by boat, train, or automobile. Hannah Schwartz in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Reese stalked the roadside, kicking at dandelion blossoms and other blooming wildflowers. All he wanted to do was talk to Hannah, but she thwarted him at every turn. She never even gave him a chance to say he was sorry. The kid was the key. He knew his wife, and she'd do anything for a child. Her gentle nature had attracted him, but once he'd married her, he'd found her tough as shoe leather under that sweet smile. She had a way of defying him that most people wouldn't notice because of its subtlety. Who would have thought she could have hidden herself away from him so completely for 5 years? She had to have had help. But now he'd found her. He'd been so lonely without her. No one else looked at him with stars in her eyes. No one else turned to him for love and protection. She had always made him a bigger man than he was. He wanted her to love him completely again. It was her duty anyway. The minute he'd met Hannah, he'd known she was the missing piece of his soul. If anyone could understand the demons that sometimes took him, it was her. She'd disappointed him, though, sorely. But things would be all right again. He could explain, make her see he was only thinking of her and of their marriage. He turned his thoughts back to the kid. Maybe they really could be a family. His head filled with notions of throwing a baseball on Saturday afternoons and taking her for ice cream. Fatherhood might not be so bad. They'd be the perfect little family, but he'd have to make sure this was the only kid. No more. He couldn't handle a bunch of screaming brats. Hannah hadn't believed that he'd join the Amish church. He really was trying. Their religion was a bunch of mumbo-jumbo to him, but at least he was giving it an effort. She should give him credit for making the attempt. The small house radiated cleanliness. Hannah wondered about that. Most guys didn't notice things like the soap dishes at the sink, but Matt's were spotless. Did he have a cleaning service that kept this place up even when it wasn't rented? When she went back to the living room, Angie was stretched out on the sofa with her shoes off. Ajax lay beside her, his face a picture of contentment, as she stroked his ears. Hannah dropped into the oversized chair and propped her feet on the ottoman.
"Nice place Mr. Detective Man has," Angie said. "Bully furnished, too. Wonder why he has a rental."
"It's pretty," Hannah agreed. "It's definitely a man's place, though. The furniture is oversized and a little big for this room. No pictures on the walls, nothing on the tables but lamps." Angie chuckled. "A woman's touch would change that. Still, it's nice. And everything is so organized in the kitchen." Hannah heard the sound of a vehicle, then a dog barking. Ajax's ears perked, and he got off the couch and stretched before padding to the door. "I think he's back." She went to the door just as it opened. Matt entered, lugging two cat carriers. His partner came behind him with two more. All four cats hissed when the dog barked. "It's going to be a zoo," he said, setting the carriers down on the tile floor in the entry. He appeared tense, and irritation hunkered in his eyes. "Have I mentioned that I hate cats? Is that right?" It was all Hannah could do to keep a straight face. She knelt before the first carrier and opened the door. With a yowl, Spooky rushed out. Every hair on end, the black cat leaped over Ajax, who was crouched down, peering into the cage. The outraged feline disappeared under the sofa. "He won't come out for hours," Hannah said. "Maybe I'd better take the rest of them to the bedroom and let them out." She lifted the carrier containing marmalade and started down the hall. Matt followed with the other two carriers. "Thanks for getting them for me," she told him. He grunted in response, and her smile vanished.
Look, I know it's a trial to you. I'm sorry. You want us to go to a hotel or back to Aunt Nora's? No, you stay here. It's just that I hate cats. I think I heard that somewhere. She smiled. When he didn't respond, she gave a mental shrug. Why do you have a rental anyway? It was my first house. I got too good a deal to throw it away, so I've rented it out, and it's paid off now. A good investment. It's a nice place, but I really don't mind staying with Aunt Nora. Hannah was dying to find out what her aunt knew, but she wanted to give Nora at least a day of grieving space. Maybe we can go back in a day or so. She said something about needing to tell you what's been going on. But what's her role in this? It was a piece that didn't fit. I wish I knew. Ree sent her the picture of the girl, and she mailed it on to me. Maybe he called her or something. Maybe he threatened her. Like you said, maybe he threw the Molotov cocktail in the window, and she knows he did. And why? He set the two carriers on the floor and opened them before answering. The cats poked their noses into the room before stepping daintily out onto the carpet. I'm frustrated, he said. I've got no real direction on this murder. The guy who found the body was back at the scene today. I'll follow that and see where it goes, but there's no obvious motive. He glanced at her. I shouldn't be saying anything about the case, but you're easy to talk to. The warmth in his gaze brought heat to her cheeks. Here, I thought you hated me. I'd like to, he said softly. The heat in her face kicked up a notch, and she looked away from the interest in his gaze. About the murder. Maybe it's a case of prejudice. The day I met Reese, some kids were throwing rotten tomatoes at me. He chased them off and took me for a soda. If only she'd known then that his rescuer persona hid a controlling personality as well. Matt stashed the carriers in the depths of the closet and backed out. It's possible, but murder is a far cry from pranks. His tone went back to impersonal. Arson isn't a prank, she pointed out. Remember those fires that took place before Mam and Dad died? When you're a farmer, that's your livelihood. They walked to the living room. The back door was open, and Hannah could see Angie outside throwing a stick to Ajax. Did they ever figure out who was behind the rash of attacks? He asked. No. This was about a year before my family was murdered, before you got on at the sheriff's department. I'll check out the old records. Maybe there will be a lead. She gestured to the couch, then curled up in the chair. Have you reopened the investigation on my family? It was never closed. It just went cold. But yeah, I'm trying to look for similarities. I always thought Long had to have an accomplice. Her lips pressed together, and he knew who she thought that person had to be. Tell me again about that night. Reese was late that night, so late that I was attacked in the bridge. His head jerked up. I never heard about that. What happened? He got there in time to run them off. A slight smile lifted her lips. Always the rescuer. She wanted to tell Matt her suspicions about Reese, but maybe it was anger and bitterness, not truth, that made her wonder if Reese could have been her parents' killer. The more she'd thought about it over the years, the more convinced she'd become. She eyed Matt. Would he even believe her? I've wondered if Reese had something to do with the murders, especially after he began to demonstrate his violent side. Long was seen making the cookies, Matt said. What about the symbol on the wall and the quilt? What about it? How did that relate to Cyrus, and what was his motive? He shrugged, but uneasiness flickered in his eyes. I don't know. We never found a motive or a connection to the peace symbol. Well, I researched it. Wait here a minute. She got up and went to the bedroom, where she dragged out the folder she'd kept all these years. When she got back to the living room, she opened it and flipped through it. Here. I found the symbol and the Greek word. The word was anathema. Anathema. Weird word. What's it mean? She knew what it meant firsthand, but she kept her tone cool and clinical, though it took major effort. It's a person or thing cursed and devoted to destruction. It could also be a formal ecclesiastical curse involving excommunication, Early on, the Catholic Church adopted the word anathema to signify the exclusion of a sinner from the society of the faithful, but it was pronounced mostly against heretics, and it can mean something that is completely destroyed for the glory of God. I think it's someone who hates the Amish. And the peace symbol? At least he was listening. She flipped to another page and pointed to the symbol. It's a peace symbol, like you said, but it's also called Nero's cross. In this case, I think it's meant as a warning to Christians. Nero used it to symbolize the destruction of Christianity. I think the killer meant it as a warning to exterminate my family. His eyes widened. You mean, the symbol we use for peace began as a hate symbol against Christianity? She nodded. It was a visual representation of the way Nero crucified Christians, upside down. Distaste twisted his mouth. That's sick. How did the hate symbol become associated with peace? I don't know, but let's get back to the murder. It fits, Matt. Our people have been victims of misguided people for centuries. I don't expect you to understand. His hand closed on the folder. Can I look at this stuff? She didn't want to let it go. It was the accumulation of years of searching. Just be careful with it. Could you make copies and get it back to me tomorrow? He rose with the folder in his hand. I'll go one better. I'll go to the office and make copies and bring it back tonight. He was more perceptive than she'd realized, and kinder than his gruff voice led on. She remembered Reese had taken credit for getting the younger man on at the sheriff's department. You knew Reese on the force, right? You were partners, she asked. Matt went toward the door without meeting her gaze. I knew him. She caught up with him in the hall. How well did you know him? Well enough, but that has nothing to do with the investigation. Her warm feelings toward him vanished. It might, if it interferes. I'm a professional. My personal life doesn't intrude on my job. She stood her ground when he started to step past her. If that's true, then what are you hiding? He folded his arms across his chest. It's not a big deal, okay? He was a foster kid that my grandmother raised. He came back to visit her sometimes, and I met him there. I was a punk kid with an attitude, and he tried to help me. His frown deepened, which made it hurt all the more when he ran off with you without a word and stole my gun. Hannah didn't hide the surprise in her voice. Trudy Beitler is your grandmother? Reese talked about her a lot. He said she was wonderful. Have you met her? Hannah shook her head. Her daughter Irene was my mother's best friend, though. Irene's English. My mom was English. You're kidding. She shook her head. She met my dad when she was 18. Actually, Irene introduced them. Mom always said he was worth more than any TV set. She smiled at the memory. It doesn't happen very often. The Amish are always a little doubtful that anyone who has lived in the world can make that change. But my mom showed them. Did you ever meet my Aunt Irene? She saw me in a store one day and came up to ask if I was Patty's daughter. I didn't know who she meant for a minute. Everyone I knew called Mom Patricia. Irene told me about their friendship. I saw it in action a few minutes later when Mom saw her and came to chat. Mom was so glad to see her. She even shared some news no one else knew but me and Dad. Were you and your aunt close? He shook his head. Nope. She raised my sister Gina, though. Your mom didn't ever go see her? So did he understand the pain of losing parents, too? Dot would have been upset with her, and Mom never wanted to rock the boat. Her parents were dead, and her only sister had moved to Maine, so there was no English family left in town. My mother left that life completely behind her. Her friendship with Irene, too? Matt asked. I guess so. She wasn't part of my life growing up. Does she still live here? Maybe she'd reach out to Irene, find out more about her mother's life. Yep, in the same house. Did you live with your grandmother instead of your aunt? She asked, curious if he'd answer the question. He shrugged. When I was 8, my dad hanged himself. My mom decided she wasn't cut out for motherhood and vamoosed. I haven't seen her since. His voice crackled with hostility. My aunt couldn't handle a rambunctious boy. Her maternal heart gave a pang. A child should know his mother. Matt, have you learned anything about the girl in the picture? He grabbed hold of the doorknob. When have I had time to look? I've been chasing after your cats. His gaze shuddered. He opened the door and exited. She stared after him. Why wouldn't he help her find the child? His demeanor changed every time the subject came up. The old pickup caught air over the potholes in the road. Reese forced himself to slow down. The old truck couldn't take that much abuse. The Schwartz farm was just over the next hill, and he could barely make out its windmill from here. But his target this evening wasn't Hannah. He pulled to the side of the road and watched the neighboring house. Ellen Long had to be home because her black car was in the driveway. He'd wondered why she didn't go to Mo Honegger's funeral. Had she remarried? He'd never heard. A light flickered on in a downstairs room as twilight fell. Additional confirmation that the woman was inside. Reese let the truck roll forward and turn in behind the Saturn. A dog barked at the loud screech the truck door made when he opened it, but he didn't come to challenge him. Too bad. He was in the mood to kick something. Nothing had gone as planned so far. Hannah wasn't staying at her family farm, and he had lost track of her. He hoped Ellen Long might shed some light on the situation. Of course, all he really had to do was grab the kid, but it wasn't as easy as he had thought. Taking her from under Matt's watchful eyes would be difficult. Besides, things weren't quite in place. It was one thing to grab the kid and Hannah, and another thing to escape with them before Matt ran him to the ground. He couldn't tell himself why it was so important that he find Hannah. After all, once he had the kid, Hannah would come to him. But his soul craved the sight of her. He'd been lonely the last 5 years, and not a day went by that he didn't long for her. He saw himself in her eyes as strong and powerful. Only Hannah had ever truly loved him. She was the linchpin that kept his life together. After she left, everything had gone sour for him, and he'd blown it. But he'd be gentler this time. He'd keep her with him forever. He jogged to the side door and knocked hard. From inside, he could hear the murmur of the television. He knocked again and finally heard the shuffle of feet on the floor. The white door opened, and a woman peered out. If he hadn't known it was Ellen Long, he wouldn't have recognized her. She wasn't the fashion plate he remembered. Instead, she wore paint-stained sweats. A rubber band caught back her blonde hair, and she wore no makeup. Her feet were bare. "Yes," she said in a tone that suggested she wanted to get back to her TV. "Hi, Ellen. How are you?" He put on his most winning smile, but also slipped his foot in the door so she couldn't close it. It was a good thing he did. As recognition swept over her face, she tried to slam the door. "I'd like to talk to you for a minute." "I have nothing to say to you," she spat. "You left town with that little Amish tramp." His muscles tensed. "Don't talk about Hannah like that. You got what you wanted. Your husband out of the way." "What good was that when you left me?" Her voice thickened with tears. "I've missed you, Reese. We used to have some good times." She slumped against the door jamb. Her hard gaze softened. "It's been a long time. You surprised me." "Want to come in?" She reached out and touched his face. What had he seen in this woman? He realized he'd used her, but right now she disgusted him. Being around Hannah's purity had spoiled him for women like this. He recoiled. "I don't think so, Ellen. Did you know Hannah was back in town? Have you seen her around?" Her eyes glittered and her mouth twisted. "Can't keep your wife under control?" "We're separated," he mumbled. "Look, just answer the question." "No, I haven't seen her." She gave a pointed stare at his foot. "Now, get your boot out of my doorway and leave me alone. Unless you want to come in after all. Just once, for old time's sake." He wasn't even tempted. She needed a lesson about respect. Reese clenched his fist and moved toward her, but a car slowed in front of the house. He glanced behind him and saw its turn signal flashing. There was no time to teach her a lesson. He sent a warning glare her way, then stomped back to his truck and accelerated away. Maybe a cruise through town would turn up some clue as to Hannah's whereabouts. 13. The Amish triangle quilt is a symbol of all that matters to the Amish: God, family, and community. Hannah Schwartz, in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Guilt was an uncomfortable bedfellow. Matt hadn't been able to sleep all night. What was he going to do? The answers were no clearer when the new day got underway. He glanced at his daughter in the seat beside him. She was more important than anyone else in his life. How could he thrust her into such a terrible situation? "Why do I have to visit Grandma Trudy, Daddy? She doesn't like me." Caitlin kicked her feet back and forth in the seat. She looked cute in the dress she'd worn to church, a pink lacy number Gina had picked out. "It's our duty, Caitlin. Duty is important. We don't always feel like doing it, but some things we have to do anyway." "I thought we were going to see Aunt Gina. I get to stay with her, don't I? I don't have to stay at Grandma Trudy's." "No, you don't have to stay there." He wasn't keen on leaving her with Gina either. She'd stayed with him 2 days, then Blake had sweet-talked her home. She and Blake were likely still fighting, but at least they'd protect Caitlin. He didn't know another place to leave her where Hannah wouldn't stumble into seeing her. Matt drove out County Road 100E to the narrow lane that led to Trudy's big farmhouse. He parked behind her old car, more rusty than blue these days. A chair with one rocker missing tilted on the porch by the fly-speckled picture window. The porch swing hung crazily at an angle. He'd fixed it last month, but it looked as though the chain had broken again, and she'd hooked it up on the next link. He should probably replace all of it. The house was a never-ending money pit, but Trudy refused to move into something easier to care for in town. She wasn't poor by any stretch of the imagination, but she hated to waste money on the house. Ajax woofed in the back seat and pawed at the door handle. "Hold on," Matt muttered. Glancing at the house as he let the dog out, he wondered if Trudy was home. No light shone through the darkened windows. He hoped the old lady hadn't fallen or something, though she was active and spry for 72. She belonged to several clubs in town and drove herself everywhere in that old beater car. Ajax beat him and Caitlin to the door. The scent of last year's roses lingered around the entry. Pressing the doorbell, he listened to it ding on the other side. There was no answer, so he dug out his key and opened the door. The odor of stale air and dusty carpet greeted him. "Trudy?" he called, pushing past the dog. "Stay here, Caitlin." He didn't want his daughter to see anything out of place, and the dog would protect her. Shards of glass from a picture frame crunched under his shoes. The frame lay face up, the photo ripped from it. He struggled to remember what had been in it, but the memory wouldn't surface. Alarm jangled along his nerves when Trudy still didn't answer his call. He went into the living room. An upended coffee table barred his path to the living room. "Trudy?" he called again. He heard a soft groan, then saw the movement of a foot barely showing from behind the sofa. Moving it out of the way, he found the older woman on her stomach. He knelt and touched her shoulder. "Trudy?" She groaned again and tried to get up. "Don't move. I'll call an ambulance." He fumbled to get his cell phone off his belt. "No, no, I'm fine," she muttered. "Help me up, boy." Her tone was sharp and peremptory. She got to her hands and feet and shook her head as though to clear it. He grabbed her arm and helped her to her feet. She was a large woman, nearly 6 feet tall and normally as straight and erect as a general, and just as used to being obeyed. A goose egg was forming on her forehead, red and oozing with blood. She swayed where she stood, and he helped her to the sofa. She flinched when he touched her head. "Leave it, Matthew. I'm fine." She managed to smile. "Decided you'd been neglecting the old lady a bit. A visit twice in 1 week. Guilt is a wasted emotion. Get over it." A strange remark from her when she was such a master at inducing it. Who did this? She waved her hand. Her face was already beginning to regain its color. "Kids looking for drugs, I expect." Did you see anyone?
Just a noise, and I went to investigate and slipped. Guess I hit my head in the fall.
He curled his fingers into his palms. I'll see what I can find. We need to call in backup. I don't want a bunch of lawmen running around my house.
She smiled up at him. Present company excluded, of course.
Her color was coming back.
Quit fussing. I'm fine. I'm not filing a complaint. What have you been up to?
Hang on. Let me get Caitlin. He went to the door and called his daughter inside. She had her head down and wouldn't look at him.
Say hello to your grandmother, he whispered. Be nice.
Her steps dragged, but she went ahead of him into the living room.
Hi, Grandma.
Trudy's gaze went to the backpack Caitlin carried.
Are you planning on staying, child?
No. She's spending a few days with Gina. I didn't realize she had it with her. He glanced down at Caitlin.
You can put that back, Princess.
Caitlin smiled and went back outside, and Matt knew she'd brought it so she could take it out. It was hard being under Trudy's stern stare. He should know. Still, the woman meant well. She taught him discipline, and he was thankful for that.
Let me take you to the doctor, Trudy. You might need stitches.
I'll put a comfrey compress on it. I'm fine.
Why is she staying with Gina?
Trudy asked as soon as the screen door slammed. He couldn't tell anyone the full story, especially not Trudy.
I'm going to be working a lot of hours, and it seems easier.
The lie rolled off his tongue too easily, but he wasn't about to tell Trudy that Caitlin might be Hannah's daughter.
Want me to fix you some tea?
She ignored his offer.
Why are you working so many hours? What will you be doing?
Searching for the person who killed Mo Honiger. Her gaze sharpened when he said the name.
Have you thought of any new details? You didn't mention the other day whether you knew him or not.
It's pretty hard not to. I bought all my flowers and plants at the greenhouse for years.
I hear you knew the Schwartzes, at least Hannah's mom.
Trudy hadn't attended the funeral, he remembered.
But then why would she go? Their contact had been broken decades ago.
Again, I frequent the greenhouse, but where did you hear I knew Patricia?
Hannah Schwartz told me.
Her hand stopped its movement, then continued when Ajax whined outside the front door.
You mean Hannah O'Connor.
Where do you see her?
She's here in town. She and Reese are separated.
Have you seen Reese?
She had a blind spot where Reese was concerned. In her mind, he could do no wrong. It wasn't Matt's place to spoil her fantasy, though.
He's here, too, somewhere around.
Maybe he'll stop and see me. I've seen her picture. She looks like a sweet girl.
How did you know Patricia?
She was at the house to see Irene all the time.
What was she like?
Maybe if he understood the dynamics more, he'd be better able to figure this out. Trudy touched the swelling goose egg on her forehead.
Pretty. Vivacious. All the boys liked her. But once she met Abe, she wanted no one else.
How'd she meet Abe Schwartz?
He worked at your grandfather's lumberyard, and they'd also gone to school together, back before there was a dedicated Amish school. Irene introduced him to Patricia.
She rubbed her head again.
Gina's so busy. You can leave Caitlin with me.
It's already arranged with Gina. Besides, you said you weren't up to taking kids anymore.
I know my duty.
It hurt that she cared for Caitlin no more than she'd cared for Matt, out of a loveless sense of duty. It was something, but it wasn't enough.
We've got arrangements made, but thanks anyway. Are you sure I can't run you to the doctor?
I'm fine. Don't be a stranger, Matthew.
I won't.
He left her with a sense of relief. Caitlin was ready to go. She hopped in and fastened her seatbelt. He put Ajax in the back of the SUV.
How long am I staying at Aunt Gina's?
Caitlin asked.
Maybe a week.
A lifetime when he craved time with her. He just had to get things sorted out with Reese and Hannah. Find some proof that Caitlin didn't belong to them. All Sunday, Hannah moped around the house. She would have liked to attend the Amish service, but no one invited her. Maybe it was better that way.
the bishop might have expected her to confess. On Monday, Hannah found herself looking at the picture and beginning to think of the little girl as her own. Dangerous ground. But there was something in the child's sweet gaze that drew her. If only she could talk to her aunt. She tried to stop by this morning, but no one was home. She'd been in town 5 days and still had no leads. She put the picture on the coffee table when she heard a knock on the door. It was probably Angie. "Don't eat it," she told Ajax. The dog grunted. He was pinned in place by 4 cats, lying on top of him anyway. When Matt said he'd leave the dog with him for protection, she'd expected trouble, but Ajax was a perfect lamb. She went to the door just as it rang again, 2 impatient peals in quick succession. Angie would have called out to her. Peeking through the peephole, she saw a woman on the steps, about 30, with long raven hair and eyes as blue as a robin's egg. The V-neck top she wore showed a long tanned throat swathed in pearls. Her expression revealed just as much irritation as her trigger finger. Hannah opened the door. The woman's eyes widened and her mouth pressed into a thin line. Her gaze traveled from Hannah's tight bun to her shapeless skirt and flat shoes. "Who are you?" she demanded.
I'm renting this house. I had the deadbolt locked."
The woman dismissed her with a jut of her chin. "I need to pick up a few things." She started past Hannah, who stood her ground.
"Excuse me? I need to get past."
"I think you'd better tell me who you are first."
"Oh, for heaven's sake. I'm Matt's sister-in-law, okay? I left some things in the attic I need. I used to rent this dump."
Hannah thrust her hand into the pocket of her skirt and withdrew her cell phone. She'd programmed Matt's cell number into it. He answered on the first ring. "Hannah, everything okay?"
"Well, your sister-in-law is here."
"Vanessa? What's she want?"
"She says she left some things in the attic and needs them."
Hannah glanced at Vanessa, who stood tapping one high-heeled foot on the porch. She had her arms crossed over her chest. "Let me talk to her."
Hannah handed Vanessa the phone.
"He wants to talk to you."
The woman heaved a sigh and grabbed the phone.
"Matt, it's not a big deal. I just need my stuff."
She went quiet and listened.
"How dare you? There was an Ellie Tahari dress in that container, and my favorite pair of Manolo Blahnik shoes."
Hannah could have sworn there were actually tears in the woman's eyes. Evidently, Vanessa had some hidden pain to react so strongly to the loss of things. Vanessa handed the cell phone back.
"What are you staring at?" she snapped.
Hannah smiled. "You're very beautiful," she said.
The hostility faded from Vanessa's eyes.
"Have we met? You look familiar."
"I don't think so, but I was married to Reese O'Connor."
"Ah,"
Vanessa nodded.
"The Amish girl.
I remember now.
How is Reese anyway?"
"We're separated."
Vanessa's lips curved up.
"How delicious. That should cause a stir."
Hannah winced. The woman knew how to place her darts. She said nothing.
"So, why are you here? You and Matt have a little fling, if you are. You're a brave woman to tackle Iceman. Since Annalise died, he's hardly human."
Vanessa opened her bag and withdrew a slim cigarette. She lit it and blew the smoke Hannah's way. The first puff of tobacco stung Hannah's eyes, and she took a step back. "Matt was widowed?"
"Of course we're not having a fling. I'm his, renter."
She wasn't about to air her secrets to this woman.
"You're hardly his type." "Look, let me come in and just look around."
Vanessa's smile was winsome.
"Matt might be bluffing about my things. In the short time I've known him, I've never seen him bluff about anything."
Hannah had seen only quick, decisive behavior. Vanessa put one shapely foot into the doorway.
"Please, just a minute."
Ajax growled low in his throat and took a step toward her. She hastily withdrew her leg.
"That dog didn't like me from day one."
"I'm sorry. I really can't let you in without Matt's permission. You want to call him back and talk about it?" Vanessa took another draw on her cigarette, then stubbed it out against the door frame.
"It's all spite, you know."
He never liked me, even when he and Annalise were married. They were such bores once the kid came along. Vanessa shrugged. I guess I'll go if you're not going to let me in. Tell Matt. He can take a flying leap. Hannah wanted to say there was nothing between her and Matt, but Vanessa's heels were already clicking along the sidewalk to her car, a cherry red sports car of some kind. Hannah didn't know much about cars, but she knew enough to recognize something expensive. She heard a familiar rumble. A glimpse of that tan truck Reese had been driving made her grab the door and slam it. Stepping to the window, she peered through the curtain. The pickup sat idling beside Vanessa's car. Vanessa gestured back toward the house, and Reese took a long, slow look. Hannah jerked away from the window. She peeked out again when she heard a door slam. He was striding up the walk. She ran to the door and threw the deadbolt. Ajax sensed her agitation and shook off the cats. He padded to her side, and a warning growl rumbled from his chest.
Quiet,
she whispered. She peered out the peephole and saw Reese grinning at her. I know you're in there, Hannah, he said, his voice calm. Open the door and let's talk.
Go away, she shouted through the door. I have nothing to say to you.
Look, I know you're mad, honey. I don't blame you, but we've got our daughter to think about. She needs both of us. We can work this out.
I don't want to be anywhere near you, she said fiercely. You don't have our daughter anyway. It's a lie.
He rattled the door.
Let me in, Hannah. I've changed. I won't hurt you. You pushed me down the stairs.
He'd told her things would be different so many times. She knew better than to believe him. It was an accident, Hannah. I think you're remembering it wrong. He rattled the door again. Come on. Let's have some tea and talk, or we can go out for coffee. You'll be in public and in no danger. Could he be right? She didn't know what to believe. She could have sworn she'd felt him shove her. And there was no question that he'd hit her many times.
Where's the girl, Reese?
She asked quietly. Tell me that, and maybe I'll open the door.
You're trying to trick me.
We're one package. Me and the kid, Hannah. Take us both or neither one. I know what's best. If she'd heard that once, she'd heard it a million times. She stared at the doorknob. If she could trust him to lead her to the little girl, she would be tempted to open it. Ajax growled again and pushed against her leg. The dog's warning made her back away.
Go away, Reese. I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
She rushed from the door down the hall to the bathroom, where she shut herself in and clapped her hands over her ears so she couldn't be tempted to give in. 6 days after Moe's murder, Matt still had no leads. He leaned back in his chair at the sheriff's department with his hands clasped at the back of his neck.
There doesn't seem to be a clear link between Moe Honegger's murder and the Schwartz deaths.
Other than they were both poisoned with strychnine, Blake said.
Come on, that's a clear connection. Not the most common method of murder.
Copycat? It's well known about the poison, Matt suggested. He pulled the computer keyboard toward him and called up a screen. There has been only one homicide in the past 10 years. A spousal murder.
Blake looked up.
And now Reese is back in town and we have another. That has to mean something. Was he ever suspected at the time of the Schwartz murders?
Matt's gaze met his partner's.
He was a detective at the time of the first murders, so no.
And he eloped with the only daughter?
You think that ever would have happened if the parents were alive?
He was with Hannah when her family was killed, though Hannah had said he was late.
But late enough to have done the deed?
Blake dropped into a chair.
Think about it. He could have helped Long dispose of the quilts, then rushed to meet her at the bridge while the strychnine did its work. We know he was in the area because he met Hannah at the bridge. The house wasn't far.
Frankly, I don't know why the quilts were taken. They've never been sold.
Matt scratched his head.
It doesn't make any sense. If we could just find those quilts. They might have been taken as a trophy. You know how some killers take something belonging to their victims?
Maybe.
He was in the area. It wouldn't have taken long to load the quilts. They could have been in the back of his truck all along while you were searching.
You must have suspected something. If only he'd been that observant.
Matt shook his head. I didn't. I noticed how distracted he was, all worried about Hannah. When he ran off with her, I realized it was because he was crazy in love with her.
Weird, don't you think? An Amish girl like that?
Yeah.
What'd she ever see in Reese? She's a looker under those shapeless clothes and scraped back hair.
Matt had noticed, too. Long ago.
You're a married man. You're not supposed to look.
I'm married, but I'm not dead.
Matt wanted to ask if Blake was having an affair, as Gina suspected, but maintaining a partnership with his brother-in-law had become a balancing act. Blake's face changed as though he'd suddenly been struck with a thought.
What if they did it together?
What?
Maybe Hannah wanted out from under her parents' thumb and talked Reese into doing the deed, or she did it so she could marry him.
It would be unusual for anyone Amish to be involved in a violent act.
But not unheard of. Wasn't there some guy in Ohio who killed his wife or something?
Yeah. Anyone could snap.
Matt rubbed his eyes.
I followed that idea for a while back then, but I was never able to tie Hannah to the purchase of poison. Everyone talked very highly of her. There was no evidence linking her to Long except the fact that they were neighbors. And to tell you the truth, I just don't buy it.
We can check into her background. See what she's been doing in the 10 years she's been gone.
Focus on Reese. I think that holds more possibilities.
Still, Matt didn't want to believe that either. The guy had been his partner and a foster brother.
Reese had a temper at times, but didn't everyone?
Hannah said he'd beaten her.
Maybe you never really knew someone, who they were inside.
Just like the partner sitting right across from him. He had to bring this out in the open between them.
How's Gina?
Whoa, where did that come from?
She's fine.
Matt pinned Blake with his stare.
She thinks you're having an affair, Blake.
Tell me straight up.
Are you?
Blake looked away.
What if I said I was?
Matt sagged back in his chair. He hadn't wanted to believe it.
Who?
Vanessa?
Your sister-in-law?
Matt bolted upright.
You've got to be kidding. She's a man-shark, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how it happened. It just did.
Matt clenched his fists.
You idiot. This will kill my sister. I know I'm in a mess. She's pregnant. So what can I do?
Matt found no pity in his heart for his partner.
You're stupid if you believe that.
Vanessa is playing you, man. She came by my house today.
Blake scowled.
What was she doing there?
Looking for some containers of clothes and shoes. I gave them to the Salvation Army.
She'll be steamed.
What'd you go and do that for?
I don't run a storage service. I told her at least 6 times to come get them. She moved out of the place over 6 months ago, and it's been rented out since then. She had plenty of time to get them.
Man, you're stupid if you can't see you're giving up gold for pot metal.
Blake wouldn't meet his gaze.
Look, if she says she's pregnant, I believe her.
Yeah, right.
She doesn't like kids.
I'm trying to figure things out, okay? My marriage is important to me.
Not important enough to keep your pants zipped.
Matt's voice vibrated with anger.
Blake flushed.
Just shut up. It's none of your business.
Look, we've been friends a long time, Blake, and this is my sister we're talking about. I want the best for both of you, and that's not Vanessa.
You don't know her that well.
Matt rolled his eyes.
Please. She was a thorn in my flesh for the 7 years I was married to Annalise. She just made you mad over Caitlin.
Is that what she told you?
Ask her how she mocked her own sister after 2 miscarriages, or the way she talked about Caitlin as though she were some piece of trash, not worthy to be part of our family.
If the woman was going around bad-mouthing his family, he'd strangle her.
Let's not talk about her.
You brought her up.
My mistake.
Matt pulled the mouse toward him and began to look at the evidence again.
At least solving crimes was something he understood.
14. The Drunkard's Path quilt is a symbol of the journey. To the Amish, their journey is to live a life pleasing to God.
They believe you can't know your path will end in heaven and that it's presumptuous to think you can. The decision is up to God. Hannah Schwartz in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Quilting calmed her. Occupied by a needle and thread, Hannah's hands had finally quit shaking after Reese's appearance. She studied the block in her hands. The quilt was taking shape. She tied the triangle quilt to the three things the Amish held dear: God, their families, and their communities. Hannah loved the colors. Each set of two rows featured the dark and light opposites of each other: dark blue and light blue, dark green and light green, dark red and light red, all against black triangles that caused the colors to pop. This was the quilt that had to be on the cover of the book. No one could understand the Amish faith without understanding how those three elements shaped their culture.
"I heard from Fox and Friends," Angie said. "They were so impressed with their interview, they want to come here for a show. Tape you in the kitchen with some traditional Amish food, film the house and greenhouse, that kind of thing."
Hannah laid the quilt piece in her lap.
"No. I told you, no publicity while we're here."
Angie rolled her eyes.
"Hannah, you have to do this. Do you have any idea how huge this is? We can't turn this down."
She folded her arms across her chest.
"I already told them yes. They're coming next Friday. Your aunt will let them come out there, and it would be good publicity for your cousin's greenhouse."
"Luca doesn't want publicity. No one here does. Don't you get it, Angie? We are content with what God gives us." Or she used to be. When had the desire for more crept in? When the first awestruck reader emailed her? When she made her first TV appearance?
"You owe it to your publisher. You can't turn down something like this. It could translate into tens of thousands of copies sold, Hannah. This is just too big. After this is over, if you want to step back and take a break, I'll go along with it. But we can't turn up our noses at this."
Maybe Angie was right. Didn't she owe it to her publisher to do everything she could to sell the books? But she wanted to be sensitive to her family's beliefs. How could she walk that tightrope? It was hard enough being an outsider. After just a few days of this treatment, she could see why some came back to the Amish faith. She missed the love, the community.
"All right," she said. "But tell them they can't tape Aunt Nora or any other Amish person. If you've explained it to Sarah, maybe she would let us tape the children. They're so cute."
"No, absolutely not. I won't even ask her." Hannah shuddered at the thought.
"Okay, fine."
Angie's voice held disgust as she stood. "I'm going to run downtown. I need to email your publicity shot.
Could you drop me at Aunt Nora's? I really need to talk to her about this whole mess. See what she knows."
Hannah rubbed her head.
"Oh, wait. It's Monday. She always goes to visit her friends on Monday."
"You need to work anyway."
"I need some inspiration. There's a quilt fair going on at the dime store two blocks over. I think I'll take a look."
Angie frowned.
"I'm not sure it's safe. I'll be in a crowd. Call me when you're ready to come back and I'll meet you at the curb."
The cats entwined themselves around her ankles, but she booted them out of the way, then grabbed her purse and joined Angie at the door, locking it behind them. Angie led her out in front of the dime store, then drove on. Hannah stopped to glance at the quilts in the window. The traditional solid jewel tones shimmered against the black background. Looking at them made her want to keep working on her own, just as she had hoped. She slipped into the busy store and made her way to the back, where other women were admiring the quilt display. Some were only for display, but she stopped beside a stack of quilts for sale. Her hand smoothed the top one, its cotton fabric soft and lustrous. She lifted it aside and began to sort through them. It was a habit she couldn't stop. The hope of finding one of her mother's never left her. After reverently looking through the stacks, she realized there was nothing of her mother's here. Someone had those quilts. Their disappearance was one piece that didn't fit in the puzzle she'd stitched together, convicting Reese of the crime. If he'd killed her family, what had he done with the quilts?
If he'd sold them, they would have turned up on the market somewhere. She'd been everywhere, looked online and at flea markets, studied other museums' collections. Not one had ever come to light. Her obsession with finding them had infuriated Reese. Had he kept them from her deliberately to exert control over her? She made her way back into the fresh air. Surely he wouldn't have destroyed something so valuable, but she had no other explanation. She was so lost in her thoughts, she nearly collided with a figure on the sidewalk. Strong hands gripped her shoulders and steadied her. She looked up into Matt's face. "Sorry," he said. "It was my fault. I wasn't looking. I wanted to talk to you anyway. Something about the little girl?" The hopeful words sprang from her mouth. His smile faded. "No, nothing about her. I just wondered if you needed anything, and to say, I'm sorry Vanessa bothered you." He turned and began to walk toward his SUV. "Get in. I'll drive you home." Such an infuriating man. Just because he thought her quest was a wild goose chase didn't mean he could ignore her. Maybe she needed to start through town herself and ask everyone she met. She pressed her lips together and got into the vehicle. He shut the door behind her and went around to his side. She called Angie to tell her she had a ride. She put her cell phone away, then glanced around his SUV. It was neat and smelled clean with a hint of his cologne. The vehicle shifted when he got in. She'd like to ask him about his family. Vanessa's visit had made her curious about him. Would he answer any of her questions? If she got to know him better, maybe he'd help her find the little girl. He glanced at her. "I hope Vanessa's visit didn't upset you too much. She can be rather overbearing." "She was larger than life," Hannah admitted. "You were married to her sister." He nodded. "Annalise died 3 years ago." "Vanessa told me she'd died. I'm so sorry." "So was I. Our daughter misses her terribly. Annalise was a great mom and a good wife." "What happened?" "She had a brain aneurysm. She was prone to migraines, so at first that's what we thought it was. If I'd taken her sooner." His fingers tightened on the wheel. "Now, Caitlin has no mother."
"Guilt is hard to get over. I know all about that." She stared out the window.
He turned his head to look at her. "Are you talking about the lemonade?" "There was no poison in it."
She stared out the window. "I killed my family."
"The cookies killed them. It wasn't your fault."
"It was my sin. God punished."
She turned her head to look at him.
"You don't think Cyrus killed them, do you?"
"No, not anymore."
I think it was Reese, except..."
"Except for what?"
"What did he do with the quilts?"
"Sold them, maybe."
She shook her head. "They would have turned up on the market. There's no trace of them."
"Tell me, what about the murder itself? Would Reese have had time to arrange the bodies after you left, gather up the cookies, and help Cyrus get rid of the quilts before he came to meet you? How late was he?"
"Probably 15 or 20 minutes, maybe even half an hour. I didn't have a watch. The bridge was only 5 minutes from the house. If he had been waiting for me to leave, it could have happened that way. When I left the house, I went to the barn to do chores before going to meet him. I was out of the house at least an hour before I went to the bridge."
The SUV rolled to a stop at a light. Hannah couldn't face any more questions.
"Look, thanks for the offer to drive me home, but I've got some errands to run." She threw open the door and got out. In the sunshine, the fresh air cleansed the taint of death lingering from his probing. Why had she ever come back here? Her new life might have been boring, but at least grief didn't dog every step. She had to get past this, concentrate on the future, a future that might hold a reunion with her child.
He rolled down the window and called out to her.
"Wait, I'll take you where you want to go." "I'd rather walk. It's not far."
She didn't look at him but plunged down the street, dodging the water puddles on the sidewalk. If she cut through some yards, she'd have to walk only a few blocks to the house. Alone time was a treat she craved. Time to remember.
A dog barked as she walked through a muddy backyard, and she skirted a freshly seeded lawn to find her way to the sidewalk that fronted businesses along the highway. The sun warmed her face and arms, and she fanned her face with her hand. It would be a hot summer if the spring was any indication. The humidity from all the rain coated her skin. She glanced at the ice cream shop, Tammy Twist and Sizzle. Children would be apt to frequent a place like that. She changed her course and entered the store. People of all ages thronged the counter. With so many, her chances of someone recognizing the picture were greater. She fell into line behind a large woman in a pair of red capris. The lady glanced her way, and Hannah pasted on her most winsome smile. "Excuse me, but I wondered if you've seen this little girl." She produced the picture and watched the woman's expression. The woman raised her brows and looked Hannah over as if to check whether she might be dangerous.
"Why do you want to know?"
I'm looking for my daughter." The words sounded sweet on her tongue.
"Oh, my dear, I'm so sorry."
The woman took the picture and studied it. Her eyes held real regret when she handed it back and shook her head.
"I'm sorry. I'm not from around here, though. You might try the counter people."
"Thanks. I'll do that." In the meantime, Hannah drifted from person to person and showed the picture, but no one seemed to have seen her. Finally, she reached the counter where she ordered a cup of chocolate almond ice cream. There was a lull in the line of customers, so she asked the employee, a young girl with a nose ring, if she recognized the child. The girl glanced at the photo as she was ringing up Hannah's order.
"I don't know, maybe. I see a lot of kids."
She stared at Hannah with suspicion pulling at her mouth. "Do you know her name?"
"Look, I'm not a detective agency. I can't tell you anything."
"Sorry." Hannah took her dessert and walked away from the counter. She meandered across the street and cut around a couple of blocks to Sycamore Drive. As she neared the house, she saw a long box by the front door. As she came closer, she saw it was addressed with black marker. The letters were large enough that she could make out her name on the box from a distance. Postage stamps decorated the top right corner. She reached the door and stood looking down at the box. Her cell phone was in her hand before she realized it. Matt would want to check out this parcel before she opened it. She dialed the number and kept her gaze locked on the box. Whatever it was, it couldn't be good. 5 minutes later, Matt's SUV came squealing to a stop by the house. Blake got out first, then both men jogged to the house.
"You think we need to call in a bomb squad?"
Blake asked.
"Let me take a look first,"
Matt said. He pulled out some wipes and carefully went over the box before looking at them.
"Seems clean. Is Ajax inside?"
She nodded. "I left him here with the cars when I went to town." Matt unlocked the door and let the dog out. He led Ajax to the box. The dog sniffed around the box, then sat on his haunches and looked at Matt with an expectant expression.
"I think I'll risk it," Matt said.
"Stand back."
Blake and Hannah moved out by the street. Matt took out a pocket knife, slit the brown paper wrapping, and lifted it away from the box. About 8 by 20 inches, the box didn't look big enough to contain a bomb. She watched him slide the blade under the tape until the flaps lay loose and ready to reveal the contents. He gently lifted first one flap, then the next, and peered inside. He jumped back.
"Flowers," he said. "Don't get close enough to smell them." He glanced at the dog. "I'd better get Ajax checked out. I'll have the state forensics lab take a look and see if they can lift any prints."
"I'll take it to the jail," Blake said. He jogged back to the SUV and got out a big plastic bag, then slipped on a mask. He slid the box of flowers into the bag and tied the end.
"I'll be right back."
Matt put his hands in his pockets.
"I'd lay money. The flowers are loaded with strychnine. Maybe the killer was counting on you, not knowing what killed Mo."
Hannah took a step back and rubbed her palms along the material of her skirt. The attempt on her life left a bad taste in her mouth. "Maybe the killer knew I'd know. Maybe it was a warning he was coming after me."
"Maybe. And now we know he knows where you are as well."
"Reese saw me at the door when Vanessa came by."
"And you're just now telling me?"
"Sorry, I was more concerned with finding the little girl." He rolled his eyes.
"You've got my number. I need to be aware of everything. I've got a murder on my plate to try to solve. Every clue is vital.
4 murders, she reminded him.
Okay, 4.